Welcome back, students. In the first module of lesson 4, tribals, dikus and the vision of a golden age, we discussed about different tribal communities and their livelihood. They were involved in different activities. Some were shifting cultivators, some were hunter-gatherers, and some communities followed pastoralism and some communities followed settled cultivation. Now, in the second module, we are going to study how the British rule changed the life of the tribal people. The British rule changed the life of the tribal people. The British never liked those tribal groups who moved about and did not have a fixed home. They wanted these tribal groups to settle down. Settled peasants were easier to control and administer than people who were always on move. The British also wanted a regular revenue income for the state. Hence, they introduced land settlements. That is, they measure the land, define the rights of each individual of that land, and fix the revenue demand for the state. But it was very difficult for the Britishers to collect taxes from the shifting cultivators because they never stayed in one place. So the British effort to settle Jhum cultivators was not successful. The British brought several changes in forest laws. They passed many forest acts. They classified the forest. They made a classification of forests. Some forests were classified as reserved forests, in which entry of people was highly restricted. The British declared that forests were state property. The people were not allowed to move properly and freely and practice Jhum cultivation. As a result, Jhum cultivators moved to other areas. Now, the British faced a problem of shortage of labor. Hence, they decided that they would give Jhum cultivators small patches of land in the forest and allowed them to cultivate these on the condition that those who lived in the villages would have to provide free labor to the forest department. They were asked to lay roads, or they were asked to cut down the trees, or they were asked to collect the forest produce and submit to the Britishers. So many tribal groups reacted against all this, and they were against the forest laws. Many times they revolted. During the 19th century, traders and money lenders began to come into the forest. They offered cash loan to the tribal people and asked them to work for wages. Innocent people, they borrowed loans and used those loans to buy the things what they wanted from traders. The case of silk growers is worth mentioning in this regard. In the 18th century, Indian silk was in demand in European markets. Hence, the East India Company encouraged silk production to meet the demand. The Santals, the tribal community, was known for their silk weaving. They were They were very popular silk weavers. The Santals of Hazaribagh reared cocoons. The silk traders sent in their agents who gave loans to them to collect the cocoons. The growers were paid 3 to 4 rupees for 1,000 cocoons. These were then exported to Burdwan or Gaya, where they were sold at 5 times the price. Thus, the silk growers earned very little. Many tribal groups saw the market and traders as their main enemies. They called the moneylenders and the traders as dikos. The plight of the tribals who had to go far away from their homes was even worse. Many tribals were recruited in large numbers to work in the tea plantations in Assam and coal mines in Jharkhand. Please see the illustration in slide 8. Finally, the tribal groups in different parts of the country rebelled against the British. The Koles in Maharashtra in 1830s, the Santals in 1855, the Mundas in 1890s, the Bastar Rebellion in 1910 were some of the popular revolts. Finally, the movement led by Birsa Munda became very popular. And it is worth mentioning here also. Birsa Munda, a closer look. Birsa Munda himself declared that God had appointed him to save his people from trouble, free them from the slavery of dikus. Birsa listened to the sermons of missionaries, later spent time with a prominent Vaishnav preacher. He united all the tribal people. The political aim of Birsa movement was to drive out missionaries, moneylenders, and Hindu landlords. This movement aimed to set up a Munda Raj with Birsa as its head. Illustrations given in slide 12 to 18. As the movement spread, the British arrested Birsa in 1895. In 1897, he was released. Afterwards, he toured the villages to gather support. He urged his people to destroy Ravana. Dikus and Europeans were called as Ravana by Birsa. And he wanted to establish a kingdom under his leadership. Birsa died in 1900 and the movement initiated by him faded out. But its significance cannot be undermined. So now, let us see what we studied so far in this module. The forest laws and its impact. Problem with the traders. The plight of silk growers. Popular tribal revolts. Birsa Munda's participation in Munda revolt. Now it is time to check your memory. I would like to ask you few questions. What was the main activity of Santals of Hazaribagh? Rearing silkworm. Yes, you're right. who were considered as enemies for the tribals? Traders and moneylenders? Yes, it's good. Traders and moneylenders were enemies for the tribals. And they call them as Dikus. Any two tribal revolts, Kohl's Rebellion and Bastar Rebellion. Yes, you're right. What was the aim of Birsa? To establish Munda Raj. Yes, you're right. Students, to make you understand better, the main points of the lesson is given in handout. Please go through the handout and also go through your textbook. After reading the lesson, you please assess yourself. To assess yourself, worksheet is given, self-assessment. Try to get the answers, attempt all the questions and check your answer. Make use of these study materials. Stay safe. Keep learning. Bye.